The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We turn our attention to a guest for a quick interview here. His name, Damian Gordon. He's a political analyst out there in Jamaica. Damian, good morning to you and welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM here in Trinidad.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, wonderful, 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 wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about the atmosphere in Jamaica this time, given the fact that Andrew Holness, the Prime Minister, is now given a third term. He's the second Prime Minister to do that. Can you tell us who the first was and the atmosphere in Jamaica this time?
Well, there were in fact two previous Prime Ministers who had served three terms in office. The first Prime Minister, Sir Alexander Bustamante, served three terms as Prime Minister, however, did not serve those three terms consecutively. So he served a two-term and returned for a third term, but those terms were not served consecutively.
Mm-hmm.
So he would, in fact, be the third Prime Minister to have served third term, a third term as Prime Minister in office. The second would have been Percival James Patterson, who is our longest-serving Prime Minister. He served four terms as Prime Minister, and now Andrew Holness is on his way to serving his third term as Prime Minister. So he would be the third Prime Minister, in fact, who has served or who is likely to serve three terms as Prime Minister. In terms of the atmosphere, supporters of the Jamaica Labour Party are happy, understandably, while supporters of the People's National Party are disappointed because the People's National Party had thought that they had done enough and that at least one of our polls had pointed to a slim victory for the People's National Party. We had a local government election which was held early this year, and the People's National Party did very well. The opposition People's National Party did very well, and therefore had a momentum of sort going into this election, and thought that they were in a good position to unseat the ruling Jamaica Labour Party. That did not happen because but it was a very close contest. Thing the ruling Jamaica Labour Party secured 34 seats to the People's National Party 29 seats. This would have been a significant improvement from the 14 seats that the People's National Party had going into the election. They wrested 15 seats from the ruling Jamaica Labour Party, which is a very strong showing by the opposition. So I think while the government was re-elected, I think their celebration was tempered by the fact that, you know, they lost 15 seats in one election cycle. In a low turnout election. The turnout, as estimated by our electoral office of Jamaica, or EOJ, was about 40%. A very low voter turnout. So while the ruling party was happy, and the Prime Minister obviously is happy, you know, for the fact that he was returned and re-elected, there are broader concerns about voter apathy, and there are also concerns about voter dissatisfaction with the government, which would explain why the government lost 15 seats in one election. So I think that is just that's a more nuanced analysis of the election outcome.
So I did make a pronouncement on it earlier this morning that this means that the JLP needs to do some kind of introspection to figure out where the fallout was. Is it that supporters of the JLP lost interest in their governance style and decided not to vote at all as opposed to voting for the opposition while the voters came out and vote, similarly to what happens in Trinidad. Could that be said?
I think the apathy has been an issue that has been, you know, affecting the quality of our democracy for some time now. In 2020, when we had a general election during the COVID-19 pandemic, the turnout then was 36.8%. And the subsequent election was 48.8% in 2016. But the trend since the 1990s has been pointing to declining voter turnout in each successive election. And this turnout was consistent with that trend. The issue of voter apathy, I think the root of it is much broader than you know, supporters of the two political parties not turning out in large numbers. There are concerns about, concerns about the quality of the representation offered by members of parliament. Voters complain about missing members of parliament, would frequently complain about the absence of members of parliament, the lack of visibility of members of parliament in their constituencies, the talk about the lack of the development of community infrastructure, the lack of, you know, economic opportunities and opportunities for upskilling, supporting youth and so forth. So there are a wide range of issues that come together that are fueling voter apathy. This current government has went into the election with several significant achievements that, you know, if a government were seeking a mandate from voters with these achievements generally, then most persons would think that, you know, this government would make a compelling case for its re-election. We have historically low poverty levels, we have historically low unemployment levels, we have historically low murder rate as reduced by over almost 50%. So we're historically low murder rate, and our economy has been relatively stable. But a part of the challenge the government face is that there are other issues, or the other concerns are that the government has not addressed. There are lingering concerns about corruption. The prime minister himself is a subject of an investigation about, you know, illicit enrichment, and several other high-profile ministers were either removed or you know, for corruption allegations. So that's a cloud that continues to hang over the prime minister's head. While the prime minister himself is relatively popular among supporters of the ruling Jamaica Labour Party, many of the members of parliament aligned to the ruling party are unpopular on account of the perception that they have not represented their constituencies well. And many constituents separate the local issues from the national issues. So they vote for a local representative distinguishable from how they view the prime minister. There is also the view that macroeconomic growth at that level has not necessarily translated and has positively impacted the average Jamaican. The average Jamaican feels largely excluded from macroeconomic growth. So all the investments and the infrastructure development and the real estate development support that the government boasts about, there's a view that these metrics tend to benefit disproportionately specific segments of the Jamaican society and not ordinary people. So people feel that although growth is taking place, this has not positively affected their day-to-day and lived realities. And even where job creation is concerned, many Jamaicans feel that the jobs that are being created are largely low-paying, low-skilled jobs that don't significantly improve their material or economic or financial position. So there's a disconnect between, you know, how the government views its own performance vis-a-vis how of the Jamaicans perceive or experience the policies of the government. And that disconnect is apparent in the fact that almost 60% of those eligible to vote did not show up to vote. And both political parties are being affected by low levels of voter enthusiasm and high voter dissatisfaction, because not even they aren't able to even mobilize their bases to show up and vote for them in high numbers.
Now, some of the GLP members, you know, social media, we get in those reports, they come across as arrogant, some of them cursing, etc. You think that played a part outside of the absence of their representatives in their communities and constituencies? That kind of arrogant attitude, you think that would have played a part in voters just deciding, you know what, I can't give you my vote?
That definitely looks to have played a part, in the sense that there is a strong view that many of the current members of the government have not met public expectations where their conduct is concerned. There are certain standards of decency and civility and exemplary conduct that we expect from parliamentarians and members of government. And many of the members of the current government have not risen or have not met those expectations. Mm-hmm. We're talking about very arrogant, dismissive, and disrespectful language that turns off many voters, especially the undecided and the uncommitted voters.
What about the younger ones?
It's important for elected officials to lead by examples. Several of them have not led by examples. Several of them are also repeat offenders in terms of using offensive and disrespectful language, and just behaving in manners that is not consistent with our expectations of decency and civility in public office.
With every political party, you would have party founders, the stalwarts, as we call them. We have people like Dr. Chang, Leroy Chuck, Desmond McKenzie, Olivia Grange. You know, they all came back to the party after so long, you know. Could this be a turn off to the younger voters, given the fact that they're not seeing young, bright minds, but more of a recycled politician returning to politics or to the party, you know, after being away for so long?
Certainly, we have several members of parliament who have served 5 terms, and some last night were elected to serve a 6th term. You do the math, 6 terms, 6 by 5, that's equivalent to 30 years. So obviously there is a view among many young people that the system, you know, doesn't work in their interest. It doesn't encourage regeneration or renewal. They call many of these politicians old dinosaurs that win on the basis or continue to win on the basis of political traditions rather than their legacy or their accomplishments. And because a lot of voters feel that these incumbents are unlikely to lose, they think that if they show up to vote, these votes will be wasted votes. So many of them stay away from the polls where, you know, especially in constituencies where certain incumbents have entrenched themselves, voters feel that going up against those incumbents would be an exercise in futility, and many of them simply just do not vote.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also concerned about the lack of succession planning, where there is no space provided for the identification of young talent and nurturing those young talent to take over. It would appear that some politicians are hell-bent on retaining or holding office for as long as they can. We had 2 or 3 outgoing members of parliament who were almost 90. And young people have been calling for an age of retirement for politicians, in the same way other public servants, an age of retirement is imposed on other public servants.
But that will so call
that is also fueling apathy as well. The fact that too many old politicians who have served 5-6 terms are still running and are still winning as members of parliament, and they're concerned about the lack of renewal and regeneration and youth involvement in representational politics.
But that speaks in stark contrast to what you would have stated earlier of the absence. Now, is it now one listening to this interview would come to a realization that, listen, we have voter absence and a low turnout because we're not seeing you in the area. You're not representing us well. Is it that the handful that would have seen a sixth term in office after between 30 to 40 years in that constituency, and is it that persons are just voting them back in continuously, even though they are not getting what they need? Is it that the opposition is not putting up a viable...
Because in Jamaica, as in Trinidad, we have seats that we consider to be safe seats. So you may know some of the safe seats that always vote UNC or always vote PNM. We have those seats in Jamaica, where because of political traditions, a particular MP aligned to a particular political party tend to win that seat all the time. And their opponents do not stand a realistic chance of winning those seats. And many of them have held safe seats. And because there's a view that political opponents stand very realistic chance of winning in those safe seats, many voters who live in those safe seats simply just do not vote. But at a broad, at a macro level, average young voters keep on saying, well, we have people in power who don't understand our issues, they're disengaged from us, they don't embrace modern approaches to, you know, governance and participatory democracy. And because of that, many young people feel alienated from politics because they can't relate. There's a lack of relatability with some of the older politicians who don't have much in terms of their legacies. Because of that, many young youth do not think it even makes sense to aspire to serve, because the older persons are not making a way or creating that space for younger people to serve in representational politics because they overstay their time in office.
But is this something traditional with Jamaican politics? Is it a customary thing where we are not... Do you all have a youth parliament in Jamaica?
Yes, I have a youth parliament, but it is more tokenism than anything meaningful. It's just a show. You know, occasionally they have a sit-in, but, you know, beyond that, it doesn't have any further contribution to our governance. And so it is really one of those, it's tokenism. It's just...
I understand.
An event that we have intermittently. We have a designated day for youth parliament, but after that, we don't hear anything about youth parliament again. Doesn't have like continued role or presence. It's really an exercise in tokenism, more or less.
All right. So, what would you say about Mark Golding's leadership of the PDP when he took over from Dr. Phillips? Now, the party was in a mess, and of course, coming into this election, the word on the ground was that the people wasn't ready. But what do you think about his performance, though? And based on the fact that the GLP would have lost some 15 seats, gaining that on the PNP, I think, right? What does that pave the way for Mark Golding to now set up himself, prepare himself for a 2030 victory at the polls?
I would say so. I think the history of Mark Golding's rise to become the president of the People's National Party, you know, it's pretty, how do I describe it? It's fascinating because Mark Golding is an atypical politician. By all metrics, he's an atypical politician. He does not look or sound like a typical political leader. In Jamaica, we have historically had a cult of personality where we have certain attributes in our leaders. They're usually very charismatic. the very charismatic, usually popular, populist, usually. They're very good oratorical skill. They're very good public speakers. They know how to galvanize and energize their bases. Mark Golden is white in a Jamaica where mm-hmm. most the average Jamaican is of African descent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In fact, the People's National Party, you know, spend. When Edward Sheeran was the leader of the Jamaican Labour Party, the People's National Party would have made his race an issue for many, many decades. Now, the People's National Party has come now and, you know, elected a white Jamaican of sorts to lead. And that did not sit well with many supporters of the People's National Party, and many Jamaicans by extension, because he's a British, his heritage is British, and we know that the British were responsible for the colonization and enslavement mm-hmm. of Jamaicans. You know, you can just, so there's still a racial sensitivity among Jamaicans about the history of colonialism, and you know, some of those, you know, some of that resentment was directed at Mark Golden initially.
Well, similar.
So the problem. Yes.
Oh, okay. You said the other problem was.
So he had a problem in terms of uniting the party initially, because coming out of the 2020 election, the party was heavily fractured, it was heavily divided, and it was split into two factions, a lot of those who were aligned to a particular faction were just hell-bent that they would not support his candidacy. He was not a true socialist, he was a capitalist. He didn't represent the grassroots Jamaicans. He didn't represent the interests of the labor class or the labor movement. And they just said that they could, because he's a wealthy Jamaican, and they viewed him with skepticism and distrust. And the Jamaican Labor Party said, well, he's a soft opponent. He's uncharismatic. He's not very likable. He's very awkward. He does have a command and presence. He doesn't sound like the typical Jamaican. So they actually said that he was their best gift. Because once he's a PNP's president, the PNP will be assured of electoral loss. Because they said that it was a walkover and easy target. But within a couple of years, he has been able to reunite the party. He has been able to bring the party from what many considered a point of decimation. In 2020, the party was badly beaten. And people are saying, well, the Jamaica Labour Party looked set to hold power for many, many years to come. But the People's National Party in a couple of years is now united, organized, the base is coming back, and the party now appears electable, and Mark Golden now is considered a potential prime minister by many Jamaicans, especially after very strong debate performances. Because we have a culture of debates in Jamaica. We have debates in the lead up to the election, and we had a series of debates, and he did extremely well and exceeded expectations. So I think the view of him has significantly shifted in recent years, to the extent that he is now a viable threat to the once very popular prime minister. And based on the election outcome this year, just last night, it is evident that the People's National Party will be competitive whenever the next election is called, and could possibly win whenever the next election is called in 2020. But where we should be having a local government election before 2030, which may test that theory before the general.
All right. In conclusion, your thoughts regionally now as we go over to Guyana and what is happening there with Dr. Irfan Ali, what are your thoughts there?
Well, so there has been an anti-incumbency wave in the Caribbean since we look at the elections that have been held recently, and you know, in Trinidad as well, the PNM was given the boot after serving two terms. we've seen an anti-incumbency wave, and we were looking at Guyana to see whether or not that anti-incumbency wave would continue. But the situation in Guyana is markedly different from the situation in many other Caribbean democracies. You know, the Guyanese economy has been doing very well, has been growing at an average 30 to 40% over the last couple of years. And there's a general view that the ruling government had done enough, certainly in terms of its social and economic programs that provided benefits for honor Guyanese to have earned re-election. But what was surprising was the overperformance of a relatively new party and candidate that would have, you know, replaced the traditional PNC, AFNU, APNU, as the country's leading opposition. So usually in Guyana, we had a duopoly where you had the PNPPP, and which was supported predominantly by Indo-Guyanese, and the PNC, which is supported by predominantly by Afro-Guyanese. That duopoly no longer exists. It was shattered in the election because the APNU, the PNC, which has morphed into the APNU, is no longer the leading opposition in Guyana coming out of this election, because you had an unknown, well, not an unknown, a relatively new political party with a new leader that did very well and made inroads into what could have been a decisive victory by the ruling PPP. So there is a lot to unpack in Guyana, especially as it relates to how the political structure of Guyana shifted as a result of the election results. So I'm still trying to unpack the re-election of the PPP was not surprising, but what was surprising was the overperformance of the new political party there that is basically less than a year old or so, and that political party emerged as the second most popular, or received the second highest percentage of the votes in the election.
All right. My final question to you this morning, does this mean that we could safely say that if we could find a suitable third option, we could now move away from this two-party country? You know, most countries, there's two political parties dominating. If a third option comes in, do you think that that system would do well for nations?
Definitely. And not only a third option, because we do have third parties in the Caribbean. They're just not viable because of the way our electoral system works. We don't separate the election of our members of parliament from the election of our prime minister. You know, for example, in Guyana and other presidential democracies, you are able to directly elect your presidents, your head of government or head of state. In Jamaica, we use the system where it is the leader of the party that has won the most seats who become
the prime minister.
So we don't directly elect our prime minister. I think that if voters were able to directly elect their prime minister, because you hear a lot of voters say, I want Andrew Onan to be the prime minister, but I don't want support the member of parliament aligned to Andrew Onan's party. Mm-hmm. But in order to get Andrew Onan as a prime minister, I have to vote for an MP who I don't support. So as I think that if people were able to directly elect their, you know, their head of government, then that would encourage more voters to participate in the election, and that would build the political viability of third parties. But in our current structure where, you know, third parties aren't able to win any seat, you know, they're highly likely to be viable, especially in the Jamaican context. However, I think that if we were able to directly vote to elect our heads of government / heads of state, then that would make third party options more viable in the eyes of average Jamaicans. So I do think that is something worth considering.
All right. I want to thank you so much for chatting with us this morning, Mr. Damian Gordon, political analyst out there in Jamaica. I thank you again, and I do wish you a great day ahead.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much. All right.
Yes, sir.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.